This episode of the Meme Factory podcast is sponsored by Simply Bitcoin. This is a Bitcoin-only daily show. Check them out at youtube.com/simplybitcoin. And we are sponsored by CryptoCloaks. CryptoCloaks strives for quality products and innovative solutions for your Bitcoin signing devices and Bitcoin nodes. Check out the Yellow Edition MK4 cold card case at CryptoCloaks.com. Enjoy the show.
Baby station.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what to do. I'll figure
it out. All right. Looks like we are live-ish. Welcome, everybody. Welcome in. You made it to another episode of the Meme Factory Stream Test. This is episode, or stream, 115. And this evening, we are joined by none other than Eric VStats. Eric, say hi.
Hello. Happy to be here.
All right. Eric, you popped up.
Before we get all serious, Eric, can you pretend like you're in the jungle in Mexico or something? Like,
I can do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Everybody, we're in the jungle of Mexico. I tell the property owners here that they're in the fucking jungle and they need to do everything that I say to get out of this business alive. So, yeah, it's very fitting.
That's excellent. Excellent acting job. Thank you. Now, you popped up on my feed maybe a week ago, week or two ago, and all I saw was like every day you were dropping a 5 to 20, 30 minute rant, and they were all highly entertaining. And I'm hoping maybe you could give the elevator pitch of who you are or who you are attempting to be in the Bitcoin space currently, sir.
Yeah. So I'm Eric. I go as by Eric V Stacks on Twitter. And I'm a cannabis farming pleb who over the last 5 years has stumbled down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and become absolutely enthralled, borderline obsessed. You know, all I can seem to think about these days is Bitcoin and the incentives and our broken money and the implications of this new technology, and where it's going to take our civilization. And so recently, a couple months back, I started making videos and posting them on Twitter, really just to expand my conversational reach. You know, I feel like I spend most of my life, or I have for many years now, yelling at the same 15 people about Bitcoin. And so, I just started loading rants. You know, I'm not the most tech-savvy individual, so I don't have much time. I'm pretty busy working my fiat farming job. And so, yeah, I just post rants. I start recording. I'll go on a rant for 5 to 25 minutes, share whatever thought I have, and throw it out there and see what happens. And people seem to like it, so kept doing it.
Well, I'm certainly enjoying them, and part of what brought you on today, enjoyed them so much, I thought we could hear more. Now,
thank you.
One of the things about this stream is that the biggest ad revenue we get is from a partner by the name of Suscore, but part of that is that they request that, they mandate that the guests read the ad copy. If you could pop in your DMs, I sent it to you already, just read that straight through and then we can get paid. You're not going to get paid. We're going to get paid. And everybody will be happy. That'd be great.
Perfect. You guys deserve it. All right, here. Let's see. Okay. Hi, my name is Eric, and this episode of the Meme Factory Stream Test is brought to you by SusCorp's new product, Ancestral Clear. Do you ever feel burdened by a weight that isn't just your own? A heaviness that seems to have been passed down through generations? A heaviness that sits in your chest? You are not alone. Many of us carry the echoes of our ancestral trauma within us, often without even realizing it. But what if you could break free from that cycle? What if you could move that weight from your chest all the way down to your balls where the pee is stored? Introducing Ancestral Clear, the revolutionary orange pill that is here to help you liberate yourself from inherited trauma. Our unique formula is designed to target and release deep-seated emotional patterns that we've unconsciously inherited from our lineage and send them deep into your ballsack. With Ancestor Clear, you're not just taking a standard suppository, you're taking a step towards healing, towards a lighter, freer you, except for your balls. Each pill is a beacon of hope and a chance to rewrite your story and rectum your inner peace. Sorry, reclaim your inner peace. Imagine a life where the chains of the past no longer hold you back, where you can experience joy and love and success unburdened by ancestral shadows. Ancestor Clear is more than a pill, it's a new beginning. Visit Sus Corp's corporate website to learn more and start your journey to healing. It's time to heal, not just for you, for generations to come. That is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yay. That's funny.
Hey, we all know the orange pill, you get big balls. It's just what happens.
You do. Yes, you do.
We can get paid now.
Now we can
get
paid. Yeah.
All right. So since you did such
Get the website. Get the pills.
That's a good job. We're going to get you fed. So we're going to pass this on over to Becca, who's going to go through your selection on the menu today, and you can make your choice at will.
Yeah, Eric, thanks for joining us. Let's move this camera. I have a selection of three sandwiches for you. So our first one is the Good PsyOp Sammy. So it's a local meat grown outdoors, and it's free from state and WEF propaganda. And what did I write? Oh, it gives you a new FUD feeling. So freedom, unity, and determination for a better future. Our second special this week is the Bitcoin Kush Burger. And with this one, you can reach a new all-time high with this cannabis-fed beef burger, which is topped with a Keith caramelized pineapple. And our house special, Yellow's Don't Stop Believing Steak Sammy, which has been marinated in Red Bull for 815 days. So one or all, these are the specials I have for you this week.
Why am I still a chicken, goddammit?
But you're smoking a joint.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to have to go with the Good PsyOps. Yeah, that local meat, that one hits a spot for me. And some newfound FUD. I'm into that. Let's transmute some fear, uncertainty, and doubt into something better, right? Yeah.
Good choice. Good choice.
Thank you.
Excellent choice, sir.
We've got Pedro. And what are your opinions about local meat? Are you in favor or against? Pedro?
Oh, definitely.
This is a question for Pedro.
Yeah.
Pedro. Pedro, this is rude.
You think he's mad?
I think he's mad or something, yeah.
Did you say something to him earlier to get this kind of reaction?
Just ask him again about meat. That's all I do.
I mean, did you make fun of a certain cut of meat that he likes? I don't understand.
I don't think so. Is Blank Angus like racist now? I don't know.
It depends on how you said it, really, I think.
Okay. Might be my fault.
Might be. Oh, well. Well, I guess we'll never know. Now, Eric, you said you lived 15 years of your life in stealth mode. What do you mean by that?
So I got into weed when I was in my mid-teens. I don't know, 15 years old was the first time I smoked cannabis. By the time I was 16 or so, a sophomore in high school, you know, I had a strong affinity for cannabis. And so I spent whatever free time I had procuring it, selling it, smoking it. Obviously, at that time, the place that I lived in California, you know, weed was illegal. And some of the elders and teachers and my friends' parents, they had an issue with that. That stigma seemed to change a little bit as medical marijuana took grip and dispensaries started popping up everywhere. But at the age of 25, I was invited to Northern California to a cannabis farm to trim and process a harvest. And so I really never left Humboldt County. I've been here since then. And the nature of my line of work as a cannabis producer, really since I was a teenager, I've had to kind of hide my lifestyle from the masses. Yeah, so I've lived in stealth mode. It's a new thing for me to put myself out there publicly, even though I'm, you know, operating a licensed cannabis facility in, you know, California. We've been legal adult use since 2018. There's still a stigma around it, and You know, I mean, I come from the era of having a nonprofit, a 215 nonprofit medical marijuana collective. But like even 8 years ago, people were using burner phones as an example. So coming out of an era where really the cannabis producers lived in hiding, you didn't socially talk about what you were doing, even if it was lawful in your state and you're paying taxes and so on. So yeah, been living in stealth mode, that's for sure.
So how do you go from stealth mode to setting up a grow operation? What does that look like?
You know, as far as when I refer to living my life in stealth mode, the era before licensed cannabis, now the state of California will license your cannabis business. You go to the county, you get a permit, and that's going to be based upon what the county land use ordinance is. And it's going to be different for every county within the state. Once you're approved by the county, you can go to the state of California and you can apply for a license. Before the licensing model, it was kind of, I don't know, it was a little bit of the Wild West. And in 2016 or 2015, the governor of California signed into effect a bill that was going to put into effect the regulatory framework for what was seemingly the inevitable recreational use getting approved for the state of California. And at that time, the whole goal was to bring all of these cannabis businesses out of what they called the gray market at the time and into regulatory compliance. So you just interface with your county. They want to know what you're doing. You register your business. They either approve it or deny it. You're approved. Then you go to the state. You apply with the state for your license.
And you're a grower, right? You produce. Where is it sold? Is it like in Amsterdam that you can go to a coffee shop in California and buy it over the counter there? Or what does that look like today?
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. And so in California, just like with everything in California, it's overregulated, in my opinion. And so you have every aspect of the business is licensed. It starts from cultivation, and there's different kinds of licenses. So this particular facility has a cultivation license. We produce the product and we give it to a licensed distributor, and that licensed distributor then takes it to a licensed retailer. And you can be an entity that holds all of those licenses and is vertically integrated, where you could hold just one of the licenses and participate in that sector of the market. But as an example, I can't retail cannabis from this business directly to a consumer because we are only licensed to cultivate. So we produce the product, it goes to a distro company, it gets tested, track and traced, they take it to retail, and it's sold at licensed retailers all over the state of California.
You're talking about permits and different permits and things you have to do and be compliance and all that, and my mind immediately goes to Bitcoin and in this transition period we are now. Are you seeing similarities between the two industries? And if you do, what can we do that the cannabis industry did wrong? Do you see something there?
Yeah, I actually see a lot of similarities. That's a really good question, and I think about this often. The parallels really, in my opinion, from my perspective, stem from the fact that you have an existing industry with Bitcoin, as an example, and cannabis. You have these existing industries that kind of emerge from the free market. And you have the regulatory agencies, the governments, trying to regulate and bring regulation into an existing industry. And some of the similarities that I see with cannabis and Bitcoin is kind of this idea that the regulators are coming in with, like, I don't know, these grandiose ideas of regulation. They want it all. We got all these plans, all these ideas. We're here to make it all work. And they seem to be asking for too much, what's totally unreasonable. With cannabis, these people making these rules really didn't understand how the cannabis industry works. And it seems just like with Bitcoin, these regulators are trying to make rules with no understanding of how this works. And so one of the things that I can say in my experience that actually I think is a positive thing that I would like to share with the Bitcoin community at large is what I saw with cannabis is they come the regulators propose all these regulations, and they come to the existing industry and they say, here's our rule set. These are our proposed rules. We want this to be the rules, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to charge you. We need the licenses. And the industry kind of told them to get fucked. Like, the turnout originally in the beginning of all of this, when they said, hey, you're going to get priority for state licensure if you register your farm. You need to come in and register your farm. You need to get into the compliance project or process, whatever your business is. You need to register it with your county. And here's this deadline. The original deadline was in December 31st of 2015. As an example, for Humboldt County, there was 12,000 farms that the county could see on Google Images via satellite. 12,000 farms that were determined to be of commercial scale. The state of California and the county says, hey, you're going to register your farm. We're going to license this whole existing industry. We need you to come forth and go to your local planning department and register your farm. Out of 12,000 visible parcels producing cannabis in the state of California, 120 people turned out. 120 people out of 12,000 turned out. You know what the regulators did? They went right back to the drawing board. They extended the deadline and they offered more favorable terms. So yeah, the Elizabeth Warrens and the Christina Lagardes, these people, they want total control. That is not lost on me for a second. I guess I just want to say, from my experience, they're asking for too much and they're going to come back with more reasonable requests. You can't KYC everybody's wallet. You can't do all of the shit that these people want, just like you couldn't do all of the crap that the government originally wanted when they were going to regulate cannabis. So they're attempting to, like, go ahead.
And related, the question is, now that most of the industry in California that we're talking is regulated, do they still grow cannabis as they used to, some people?
I would actually say most of the industry within the state of California is unregulated. Because it is. The black market exploded. Where you have a large margin, you have a large incentive for capital as an entrepreneur to flow into that sector of the marketplace and up the supply of whatever has that margin, meet the demand, and then drive that margin down.
That's so hopeful to me. Like, it's the same thing that we're talking about Bitcoin. Like, whenever it gets banned, the price, like, and adoption, like, skyrockets.
Yeah, and I think the government is just too fucking broke, straight up. Like, the federal government in the United States, I believe that they're gonna decriminalize or legalize cannabis because it's an enormous multi-billion-dollar cash industry with an enormous black market, and they're so fucked and they need money so bad that it's this huge, enormous honeypot.
But not to be like doom and gloom, right? We're up against the banks, right? And the banks are also making a lot of profit. So we're kind of like up against these guys who have the power now and the funding now. Well, maybe in cannabis land.
Don't forget that the cannabis guys and the mushroom guys are against the pharmaceutical industry. It's not a small industry.
That's a great.
Yeah, point. But I think just like the bankers and just like the large megacorps, due to the two opposing forces, we live in a deflationary world and we have an inflationary monetary system that's lent to its existence as debt against assets, requiring number go up on everything in the marketplace. So that means that if your P&L isn't increasing at the same rate that the monetary expansion is, your business is taking a haircut. So essentially, we're all fucked. We all need Bitcoin, and these large mega corporations in the state of, in the United States, they also need to get involved in a new industry that has a margin, and that's going to be cannabis. That's at least what I believe. I believe that we're going to have the big dogs are going to come in and they're going to consolidate and they're going to roll up this industry just like they do with any other industry, unfortunately. And it's just, I think, the byproduct of the fiat apparatus. And they're so broke, they need it. There's just so much money flying around changing hands with cannabis that I don't think that they can continue to pass up on, you know, regulating and taxing cannabis for much longer.
You're also on record saying that you think Bitcoin's going to make it such that these big players aren't going to do well in the future, and you think more boutique shops and people who do, you know, hand cuttings and raising are going to do very well.
I do, but I Yeah, that's, I don't know how long that's going to take. You know, is that, is this something that we're going to be able to see in 10, 20 years, or is this going to be in 100 years? You know, we have such an issue with, so with cannabis, one of the real challenges with cannabis, when it goes federally legal, that means now that you have all these big mega corporations or just big players, you could say, I call it real money. It, when cannabis became state legal, we had like small private money come in. People who could access some leverage in their world, move money around, but nobody who could directly access any deep liquidity from an FDIC insured institution. So it's like small private money. When big money can come in, they have essentially endless capital, endless capex to set up infrastructure all over the country. You know, and one of the things actually that was really helpful for understanding the forces that I'm contending with was the Saylor series and listening to Saylor talk about commoditization. And he says that you're, especially if you're a publicly traded commodity producer, you're incentivized to produce your commodity and sell it below your variable cost of production. And so that means that these large mega corporations who are the contillionaire corps, the recipients of all of this funny money that absolutely has to be printed or our whole economic paradigm will collapse immediately. They're the ones who will have endless capital. And then so what happens is a small producer, like a small farm like this, this is a farm with 2,800 square feet. It's a small farm. The incentive then becomes to be profitable or attractive in a way where I can get involved in some sort of consolidation roll-up effort and sell to some large mega corporation. That just seems to be the incentives built into our money system. So I do think, though, that as time goes on, as people feel more pain, they're more incentivized to bring the apex property of the human race onto their balance sheet. And as they hold, as small producers hold more Bitcoin, it's going to allow the people who love what they're doing and are going to hang on for dear life, much more of the ability to survive that transition from this fiat mega centralized paradigm we live in into one where small producer who is producing the most value, the productive entities within the marketplace are the ones that start to receive all the monetary energy. And so until that fiat mechanism gets changed, unfortunately, I think that more legalization or at least federal legalization is actually going to be bad for the small producer. It'll be good for the end consumer because you'll have cheap cannabis. Yeah. So kind of a lot there.
What kind of differences are there between like a small production, high quality cannabis and what you would call like a big producer? What's the difference in the methodology?
At this point, with the technology and the cultivation practices taking place, not a whole lot. What I'm doing here with 84 lights and 2,800 square feet with 1,029 plants exactly in this facility right now flowering, that I could do at 100 times the scale, 1,000 times the scale. We have software that's tracking everything. I got sensors in the root zone. I have equipment keeping the right humidity, the right temperature. Unfortunately, it's still sad to say, but you know, I'm here in Humboldt County where there's a lot of old time producers, mom and pops that have been doing this for a long, long time. Some of the people who honestly deserve the most credit, the people who said, fuck you, we're going to grow weed no matter what your laws are. These people are getting squashed out, and they've been holding on to this idea that there's going to be this Appalachian demand with a product that is heavily commoditized, and that there's an inability to produce quality cannabis at scale. And unfortunately, that's not true. You can definitely produce quality cannabis at scale. But on a positive note, with cannabis, very similar to Bitcoin, there's some sort of an ethos, an energy. I don't know what it is. But it definitely wrecks a bunch of these fucking fast fly-by-night fiat money guys that think they're going to come in and make a bunch of money and isolate some terps or do something. You know, I got endless stories of people who have come into the county and consolidated and bought properties and just got fucking wrecked. So it's very similar with Bitcoin where people come in and they got big plans. They think they're going to, you know, they're going to leverage trade or do whatever. I don't know, fancy shit. They just get wrecked. There is this.
Another similarity I see, there's lately a lot of talk about what can be on the blockchain and what cannot be, what can be transmitted and what cannot be transmitted. People are trying to allow or deny data to be transmitted, whatever it is. I won't take side right now. But there's a power struggle there. How do you see the same? Do you see the same something like that happening around patterns and hybrids of marijuana?
Yeah.
Is there a kind of control there, and how do you combat that if you can?
That's a really good question. So I have actually seen a few shitcoin blockchains hit the fucking market with this idea that you'll be able to put your genetic information onto a blockchain and store your, I don't know, proprietary or intellectual property rights as far as with specific genetics. But I do think that the free market element with cannabis, where essentially you have this seed, and it's just so easy to grow it. You can get cuttings, you can make seeds of it, you can pop bag seeds, you could take a bag of 5-year-old weed with the seed it and sprout that seed and start to grow it. And so I'm sure that there's some Monsanto's, you know, like entities that are trying to figure out how to GMO, splice some genes into cannabis so that they can spray it with Roundup and the plant won't die, or who knows what kind of dumb diabolical fiat corporate crap is, you know, behind the scenes. Similar to with Bitcoin. But I also think that similar to with Bitcoin, this free market element kind of pushes all that aside. Like, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, so what? Some company's got a big fucking patent. You know, you have this. It's like open source in some sense, where, you know, with insulin, for example, insulin is the process of making insulin is much more involved in the process of cultivating cannabis. And so two companies in the States hold the patent to insulin. So it's extremely profitable to produce and sell insulin. They have a regulatory moat built around the sector in the marketplace. It's extremely profitable. It allows them to have this monopoly. You can't really do that so easily with cannabis. And you can't do it with Bitcoin. You can't really co-opt it. It has this interesting way of like wiggling itself out of that. People are trying, though, for sure. People are trying.
You know, another similarity between Bitcoin mining in particular and cannabis growing is that you see it at all scales. So I'm wondering if you have any advice for the home growers, the people who are doing it legally, of course, on how to run a good operation.
I do have advice to really, I would say, anybody in the marketplace, whether you're doing something lawful or not or whatever. Like, as far as a business goes, how about that? It's, you know, if you're running a business in our fiat paradigm, I think it's imperative that you have the Apex property as your treasury reserve asset, because we're all getting squeezed. The home grower is getting squeezed. The black market drug dealer is getting squeezed. The nation state's getting squeezed. Nestle's getting squeezed. Everybody's getting squeezed because of the two opposing forces: deflationary world, inflationary money system. So if you're not holding Bitcoin as your treasury reserve asset, you do have an issue where you're essentially bleeding, and you have to scale up too. This is one of the other issues. You know, for me, for example, and a lot of cultivators that I know, as times have changed, you know, we get way more efficient. Dude, I am so much more efficient than I was 15 years ago. It's ridiculous. But I make the same amount of money because the product that I am producing is going down in value. So if your service or your product is going down in value, you have to hedge yourself against that squeeze through owning strong property. Bitcoin is obviously the strongest property.
Todd, prices are going up. Why is it going down?
Cannabis prices?
Liquidity? Yeah.
Are cannabis prices going down, or have they gone down?
Well, yeah, they are. Here's an example. So 10 years ago, a high quality pound, I could sell for, I don't know, say $3,000. Today, that same pound, but really actually a nicer pound, a better quality pound of cannabis, I sell for $1,000. But my cost of production and my cost of living has, I don't know, doubled, 2.5, maybe 3x. So let's say my cost to operate my life or my business, and for me, there's kind of no separation between the two, is kind of how I look at, you know, my personal world. if it's doubled, but the product that I produce is worth a third, I make 1/6 what I used to in real nominal terms. So yeah, that's the issue. It's Jeff Booth's work is just a prime example where you have a large margin, you have a large incentive for entrepreneurs and capital to move into that sector of the marketplace and meet the demand with supply. As you're meeting demand with supply, you're driving the price down, which is good for everybody if we're on a hard money standard, because now you have wage deflation, but your cost of living deflates at a faster rate.
Yeah, and so purchasing power goes up.
Correct. And so for me as a cannabis producer, I have dollar denominated wage deflation and dollar denominated cost of living inflation. It's an existential crisis. Like, what do you do? It's like Annie's food. They were lucky to sell to Nestle or whatever mega corporation they did because they couldn't hang being a small producer producing a high quality product as their cost of living goes up and the value of their product is being perpetually pushed down through innovation, through technology.
Yeah, that's that oxygen being sucked out the room and you're going to have to run faster and faster on a hamster wheel too.
Yeah.
Keep the road to surfing on, is working
exponentially harder for a currency growing exponentially weaker.
So would you say that people in the cannabis space, are they more inclined or open to Bitcoin, or are there more Bitcoiners in that line, or is it just like, are you still in normie land in that sense as well?
I'm still in normie land in that sense as well, actually, unfortunately. Yeah, and I don't know what it is, because for me personally, I was one of the first recipients of a state license in the state of California in all of history. It was, you know, I had purchased a property specifically to get it permitted and licensed. And in January of 2018, the first month that the state of California was issuing licenses in all of history, I received one of those licenses. And so for me, it was like, I don't know, it was the climax or the apex or the peak of my life at that point, right? And you know, I'd achieved what to me was like a dream come true. It was, you know, like, I don't know, I felt righteous after getting kind of frowned upon in my earlier years for liking cannabis and whatever. Now I got
like
a license.
I told you so moment for
totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got a license from the state of California to produce this product. And so I had a heavy incentive to learn more about the real estate boom bust cycles, the interest rates, the monetary policy. I think I'm 32 years old at the time. I just purchased this property. I'm in the process of getting, you know, I was approved by the county and now I'm waiting for my state license to come down the pipeline. And so I had a heavy incentive to learn what forces I was contending with in the world. And intuitively, I had this, you know, conflicted feeling where from one minute I was like, this is awesome. This is my dream come true. 30 seconds later, I was like, dude, this is fucked. I got to get out of here. I got a problem. There's a lot of counterparty risk here. So I got a real incentive to learn about the cycles, the boom bust cycles. In 2008, the Great Recession, you know, I was selling cars in my early 20s. I was 20, I don't know, 22 years old. So at that time, I didn't have the cognitive capacity to understand, or really the interest more so to understand what was taking place on a macro level. And so as a cannabis producer, just received my state license, or I'm about to, it's late 2017. You know, I stumble across some Bitcoin dialogue that really just hit home. Maybe it was one of like the first hour-long documentaries that was kind of exposing how this thing, you know, the long-term implications of having hard money. And it immediately made sense. Due to my circumstances, I was really primed for it to make sense. And actually, it was the catalyst for me shifting my business model and selling my property, which I'm very grateful that I did. So I'm a little bit confused as to why more people are more interested in Bitcoin within the cannabis industry, because the cannabis industry is really volatile and has, I don't know, a tough future in front of it, honestly. But it's kind of normie land, like you said, you know, not as many people.
If we can back it up a little bit, you were talking about value of cannabis going down. And I was thinking, isn't there like an arbitrage play you can do, or is that restricted from state laws between states? Like, you can't do a play, or is it like your arbitrage play is saving some of those profits from cannabis stacking Bitcoin?
that's really the only arbitrage play, really. I think that there will probably be some, like, you know, funny Wall Street financial games that'll get played when this goes federal. But at this point, really, the arbitrage is to earn a surplus and buy Bitcoin.
Cool. Who farted?
I heard that. I think.
Who farted?
Pedro. Was Becca on mute the whole time?
Pedro, what the fuck, man?
You farted, Pedro. Don't say anything.
What's Rope been thinking?
Well, I was curious. That wasn't my fart, though, by the way. I was curious. What the first time you smoked weed, was it like out of anything, like you got anything special about the first time you smoked weed? What, how old you were? Like for me personally, it was out of like a Coke can that crashed to put the top on and poke some holes in the bottom. Real redneck shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The very first time I smoked weed, I was 15 years old with a kind of degenerate wild friend of mine. And I was drunk. It was one of the first times that I had gotten drunk. So that was the first time I smoked weed. It didn't do anything but make me dizzy, honestly, and throw up. It was kind of enhanced that alcohol vibe. But the second time that I smoked was probably like 6 months later. Gosh, I don't know. I just remember feeling really good. Like kind of free from the discomfort, general discomfort imposed upon us from the challenging world that we live in. And I will say, too, the thing that was kind of, I haven't thought about this. That's a good question. Maybe the thing that I liked so much about it was just the general good feeling followed by the lack of a shitty feeling. I think that's what it is. You know, my parents divorced and my mother remarried when I was, I don't know, young, 7 years old, to a psychiatrist who was worked at a prison system in Southern California, and he prescribed pharmaceuticals to inmates. So I watched my mother get involved in pharmaceutical drugs at a young age, and really, I don't know, more of my family. So I had an immense aversion towards these pharmaceuticals. And I was kind of aware of, like, I don't know, the narrative around drugs and how, you know, drugs are bad for you and they'll fuck you up and make you dumb. And after smoking weed and feeling really good and then not feeling really shitty the next day, it kind of shattered, you know, my whole perspective there. Like, hold on, this isn't some crazy, terrible, illicit drug. It's just a plant. And honestly, it makes you feel quite good. So, yeah.
You know, that's par for the course with our society these days. And I think what you see more and more is more extreme behavior in stupid lies, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is an aspect of the group that is in power in the world today, the group that is in control. I think this is an effect of them losing and noticing that they're losing pieces of these control puzzles with Bitcoin and cannabis and everything. But
totally.
Replicators.
So, you know, my new perspective is that these are just the dying gasps of this governing elite. And
you say that.
I fully expect for stuff like this, the lies in particular and the fear mongering, to increase and get it to a higher and higher level until we see some sort of transition, some which you've said you think will be peaceful, but I don't necessarily know. I was hoping I could get your breakdown on how and why you think a transition to a Bitcoin standard would be a peaceful one.
That's a good question. Think about that one a lot. I went to my first Bitcoin gathering. Really, it was the first time I was around any other Bitcoiners, actually. I was going to Pacific Bitcoin this last October. And when I got back, which was an awesome experience, it was top notch being around that many people who have such a large amount of their fundamental foundational beliefs in alignment. That was powerful. You got all these people. Most of what we believe is in alignment because we all subscribe to this Bitcoin ideology, just truth and fairness. And when I got home, I was, you know, and of course I'm talking with Eric Kaysen, and I had the privilege of smoking a Fat Doobie with him, which was pretty fun. And I'm talking to Matthew Cratter, and you know, we're kind of talking about the fiat world and how the existing power structure could respond very poorly. It's like, it's checkmate. It's motherfucking checkmate. And the entity on the other side of the board might behave very irrationally, right? And so I got home and I was in the sauna, and I kind of had this very powerful, I don't know, moment where I got hit with like this tsunami of anxiety, this realization that like this is the most powerful substance in our known universe. This is the first money that we've ever had. We've been using things as money, but now we have this engineered money. This is an enormously big deal, and it's a threat to the entities that are in power. And I got hit with this like kind of big wave of anxiety, honestly. And so I started thinking about that a lot more. And I obviously, I've been thinking about that for quite some time, you know, and the what comes to mind is like a 6102. We have a 6103 or some sort of, you know, modern version of that where the government tries to confiscate the Bitcoin. And thanks to Saylor, who also was like, dude, when Saylor hit the scene, my mind fucking exploded, dude. The credibility that this fucking guy brought in. Dude, and he just goes on and on and on, and fucking this motherfucker, he's so committed to this, and it's just so much signal. He just cuts through the bullshit. And so thinking about Saylor and how calm and collective, and laser focused he is, and one of his rules, you know, be cheerful and constructive and upgrade the world, stay laser focused, you know, and then listening to, I was listening to Cratter and two other TradFi guys down at Pacific Bitcoin. And one of these individuals owns some MicroStrategy shares and had the opportunity of being on some of the Zoom calls with Michael Saylor teaching the accounting board about Bitcoin. And I'm listening to this individual tell me how cool it was listening to these regulators get orange-pilled by Michael Saylor, and like they were serious. Apparently they come back with a bunch of – they don't know anything. These fucking are total normies, right? And so – Saylor single-handedly, as far as I'm aware, spearheaded the accounting changes, right? And so now corporations are incentivized, instead of taking on more debt or consolidating an industry, which you have to do. Like, he had an existential crisis, $500 million on the balance sheet. What does he do? Does he go buy a smaller fish and gobble one up? Does he buy his own shares? Does he dilute his – he said he had a slow death or a fast death. Those are where – that's it. Option. So he needed to convert his treasury into a strong property, looks at everything, we finds Bitcoin. Well, it is the game theory, right? And so now that you have the accounting practices changed, the ETFs are here, and I'm looking at a regulatory body through the lens of my experience with cannabis. These people, going back to what you were just saying, they really only look stupid because they're trying to make sense of something you can't make sense of. A Keynesian economist, he's got a doctorate degree, is self-deluded, and they are trying to make sense of and give narrative and an explanation to something that is fucking flawed and mathematically doesn't work, right? So they look dumb as they're trying to do that. And so I think that we have more of a case of ignorance than like nefarious intent. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm, you know, a believer that there's definitely some diabolical evil overlords into a lot of evil overlording sociopathic scumbaggery. I'm fucking fully aware of that. But I think the incentive vortex is so strong. It's like the Trojan horse of freedom has made it into the castle. And I think that people are scared that we're going to have some bloody war, because I think we're looking at the new world through the lens of the old world. I think that we're looking at this old, or this new paradigm through the lens of, hey, it's always been co-opted and the game theory has always been, so the sociopath who doesn't give a fuck who will kill you and take your shit is the one who wins if you're not willing to kill and steal, essentially. And because of the inversion in the incentives, if you want the coins, as they say on the street, you need to come correct. What do you do? It's trillions of times more energy to try to attack the network than it is to protect the network, to try to mine a false block than it is to run a node. Well, those same numbers apply to try to get someone's Bitcoin versus somebody try to protect their Bitcoin. Dude, I know a guy who threw away a hard drive with one coin on it because at the time the coin was worth $300. He thought it was $500 to fix the hard drive. He threw it away. What's the DACA gonna do? Send a fucking agent to his house and waterboard him and get his keys? Give me your keys. Send him to a keys extraction camp? Like, he doesn't even have the coins, right? And so, if you want the coins, you need to provide value to the market. And if you're a corporation and you don't buy the coins, you're gonna fucking get gobbled up by MicroStrategy because they got the coins. If you're the WEF and you try to say, fuck these coins, you just, what is the saying? You can't ban Bitcoin. You can only ban yourself from it. And so here's the main reason why I think it's more probabilistic that we don't have some nasty, bloody battle through this transition is because of the people who are in charge, the rent seekers, the sociopaths who don't give a fuck, they're predisposed to do whatever to get the most, even if it means they just destroy and kill endlessly, right? Well, now, if you want the most, you don't have to destroy and kill. Actually, it doesn't even get you the coins, right? So I think they'll take the path of least resistance, which is to go to the marketplace, mine it, or trade something for it, because that's the easier way to get the coins. And if us ADIQ plebs can figure it out, I think the sociopathic, evil, diabolical scumbag overlords with all of their endless power and resources will figure out, get fucked. You can't get the coins unless you offer up some good deals. And I watched it happen with cannabis. They asked for everything. You know what happened? They didn't get shit. You know what they did? They asked for less. So of course the fucking dummies want total control. But you know, here's the other thing too that I think. They have more control if they allow us to have Bitcoin. Bitcoin's not that great for doing nefarious shit. It's a public open ledger. You know, it's not some like super free market. You can just go and pay for whatever you want anonymously. The whole world can see the transaction. And so, yeah, I just think it's a matter of time till they figure out the path of least resistance is to allow the people to have the coins. You know, a nation state too, if you're a fucking overlord, as an example, or you're a nation state apparatus and you're a bunch of politicians that make up this apparatus, you're at competition at a macro level within the marketplace against other nation states competing over scarce goods and resources. So if you try to ban Bitcoin from your people, ban Bitcoin mining, or seize all the coins, you're essentially like de-energizing your populace and you're putting yourself at a game theoretic disadvantage against the other competitors within the global marketplace who don't do that. And so I just do think, as much as it's, you know, that's a big mouthful there, but it's just game theory. I think it just boils down to game theory. And yeah, there's a lot there, but I do think that it's probabilistic that the path of least resistance is, I'm correct. Offer up some good deals, you know? I can see this. The DACA says, hey, you got to put a pub key on your tax return. They can watch every transaction. You spend some coins, then you pay capital gains. Dude, they're a bunch of broke, drunken sailors, as they're referred to all the time. They need the fucking money. What are they going to do, just confiscate everybody's coins? Another sailor saying comes to mind. History is full of people who are willing to die for their cause. Do you think if the DACA says, hey, 61, 21 million, new executive order, some fucking sociopath, baby raping fucking politicians, we want all the fucking coins. You know how many people? Oops. Did we lose you?
No, you're good. You're good. Okay. Yellow's just doing something.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I should have fucking said that one. Anyways, you know how many people would just say, get fucked? Could I picture the guy sitting in front of a tank who's like, I don't give a fuck, run me over. People will just start vaping their coins. Dude, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense as I think about it and play it out. And honestly, I think about it all the fucking time. You know, what are they going to do? Are they going to try to steal our coins? I just don't think it's probable. I don't think it's probable.
This is degenerating quickly. It's got to all
yeah.
Doing something.
Yeah.
All right. I'm seeing a pedzo and a penis and rising or rissing.
Artiste.
All right. Another concept I wanted to explore is something you brought up once that
Pedro.
You want Pedro to ask a question?
Dude, I just want to say, Eric, that was a really awesome rip, and I love the energy. I just noticed for myself, you know, like it really reminds me. I think for me it was like 2019, 2020, and we were. I don't know, you know, like you get that energy and sailor and stuff. And right now it's like, I don't know. You know, it's like, I hear what you're saying, but we need people like this to keep ripping. And because there's still so many people coming into the space, they still don't see it, you know? I don't know. Like, I'm also looking at Becca and Greg here, like their reaction, because you guys are just like looking into the camera too, like, you know, sometimes I'm caught a little bit, you know, with like, oh, I've heard it all, you know, I've heard it all, but it reminds me of such a good time when you get like that mind explosion and you start seeing all these incentives and stuff. But I don't know. I'm personally a little bit tired right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like we're already like in the bull market. If you look at the graph right now, everything's already going up and stuff. And the incentives are completely playing out. I was listening to Daniel Prince the other day. He had somebody from KPMG on, you know, and I remember talking to my best buddy like 4 years ago. I was like, oh my God, what Bukele and Saylor are doing right now, they're forcing all these companies and legacy systems to start. They're going to have to look at it now, right now. McDonald's having to accept Bitcoin in El Salvador, the head office has to look at it now. You know, it's going to wake up so many people. People have to form an opinion. They have to start learning about it. So Prince had this guy from KPMG, and he became a Bitcoiner because he was forced exposed through his company. He became a Bitcoiner, and he wrote a piece about Bitcoin mining and, you know, an actual factual piece, not just it uses too much energy. No, it's like, so you see these incentives playing out, how Bitcoin creates Bitcoiners within these companies, and then these Bitcoiners will, you know, like align incentives from within. It's super exciting to see it all play out. It just happens in super slow motion. You know?
Like watching fucking paint dry, man.
Right.
It is. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's hard to stay positive. It is. It's, you know, it's hard to stay positive, especially because as once we have, I just think about it as like Satoshi changed the fundamental fabric of our reality. Is the way I see it. Like, we have metaphysical property. You know, Saylor says he merged the physical world with the metaphysical world. He opened a portal into cyberspace. As far as I'm concerned, it's a fundamentally different reality. I look at life and think about it in terms of being like a simulation. And it's a different world. And so it's kind of hard to look at what's unfolding through the lens of the new world, kind of like Jeff Booth speaks to. And we're watching an old system, an old time atrophy, you know? And going back to the sponsor of our show, I think we need some orange pills to transmute this ancestral inherited trauma. For all of known history, people have been getting killed and had their shit taken from them. And so now, if somebody wants your shit, they gotta fucking come correct, dude. If they kill you, they don't get your Bitcoin. And so that, I think, is so powerful, it's really easy to overlook that. And we're looking at this like world that's atrophying, this power structure that's just literally like flopping out, going crazy. It's like just peak clown world, as they say, right? And so it is difficult. And I have to choose, honestly, at times, you know, in some sense, you could say this is like, I don't know, self-deluding, but like I like to look at what I believe to be a positive outcome. I also do think that it is probabilistic. You just look at the incentives. And then in addition to that, though, like we live in a quantum reality, or there's a quantum dynamic taking place. And even if that's not the case, you know, let's say you don't want to get too woo-woo, we have a situation that hasn't entirely unfolded yet, right? And so where energy, where thoughts flow, energy goes, right? And so I kind of want to just like put energy into this narrative of like, dude, the governments are coming for the Bitcoin. They're going to fucking print money and buy it. Like, we wanted big corporations here. Like, I listening to people go crazy, like Whitney Webb, I was listening to her podcast with Natalie Brunel. All this mistrust, totally well-founded mistrust of the BlackRocks of the world. But like, we wanted that. They're here. And we wanted it. And so when they show up, then we're all suspicious, which is totally logical and makes sense. And I just think that we need to go back to like what we know probabilistically. 21 million forever. Honey Badger don't give a fuck. 21 million forever. Honey Badger don't care. It doesn't matter what some group of politicians say, you know? It's like the debate with Jeff Booth and George Gammon. George Gammon, it was kind of painful to watch in some sense, because George Gammon kept talking about how we're going to corrupt Bitcoin. No, all we can do is further corrupt ourselves. You could further debase. You can't corrupt the main chain. And so the main chain is where all the power is. It is the power. The plebs have the power. Like, Bitcoin is the redistribution of wealth that the AOCs of the world want. Bitcoin is the new protocol that everybody has to play. If you don't play the protocol, you're fucked. And so the big dogs know this. And also, I guess, if I were a diabolical sociopathic overlord or group of diabolical evil sociopathic overlords, what would I do if I was confronted with an existential crisis like Bitcoin? Well, I would tell Gary G to bite the fucking lip. And don't go ahead and tell everybody that are all unregistered securities. Dude, if Gary G fucking came out 2-3 years ago and was like, look, they're all unregistered securities, we're going to go after them. We're going to sue every single one. It doesn't matter if it takes 1,000 years. Dude, the altcoin market would be done. Be over. Dude, I cannot even believe how much attention this fucking goober FTX boy got. Dude, are you kidding? FBF? How the fuck did that guy get as far as he did? I think there were people who allowed it to happen. The only way to dilute Bitcoin is to let all this crazy shit happen. I'm an ADIQ pleb who smokes a fucking pound of weed once a month, dude. Are you kidding? I could get on CNN and say dumb shit just like fucking Jamie Dimon did. Oh, Satoshi. Yeah, I could go out there and pretend. You think that fucking guy doesn't understand Bitcoin? I think he understands Bitcoin. And so, of course, it's very serendipitous, right? You know, the ETFs get approved.
You notice that none of the journalists ever ask Jamie Dimon that question, like, hey, you said you wouldn't touch it with a 6-foot pole. You know, you think it's garbage, but at the same time, you're one of the licensed or whatever, you know, like you're participating in this. Nobody has asked him that question. Why not? It's like,
because you don't perpetuate funding. The FUD that way. You don't perpetuate the FUD. It's a bunch of confusion. It is. And I also think, too, that they're going to rush in. It's like Saylor says this. There's a podcast, one of my favorite ones. It's John Vallis, Breedlove, Saylor, Kaysen, and American Hodl. It's Portal Orange. I think they were at Chateau Saylor. They were at his house. I think American Hodl asks him, like, when are all the other billionaires coming? And he says, at the time you least expect it, and in volume you didn't expect. And so I do think that it's possible, it goes back to like Samson Mao's tweet about this $1 million Bitcoin. It doesn't take a lot of money for that to happen. And going back to, if I were a diabolical, evil, sociopathic overlord who had self-interest, you allow a bunch of FUD, you allow these FTXs, you allow all this crap to happen, you and all your homies gain a position, you allow people to get wrecked buying fucking Dogecoin. And then when you take on your position, it's now $1 million a coin. And how many people get liberated out of poverty into a position where they're now a threat? I don't know. How many people have coins? You know, not 4 billion. So now you have an army of revolutionary people who are in power to the tune of, what, a couple hundred million or something? Like, that's not that crazy. But if 4 billion people get liberated from poverty, now you got a real fucking problem on your hands. So it's actually one of my concerns is that the price goes up too fast and not enough people get to wake up to it. But at the same time, once again, this is so beautiful about Bitcoin. It all circles back to it doesn't fucking matter. It's a different reality. Bitcoin, as long as Bitcoin exists, it probabilistically will appreciate at a faster rate than anything else within the marketplace, meaning your incentive is to hold Bitcoin and only what you need. So even 100 years from now, if you're a peasant and you're born into peasantry, 100% plebeian, you still will be able to remove yourself from whatever fucked economic situation you're in by buying and saving in Bitcoin. And it's going to be better to buy and save in Bitcoin than it is in another monetary instrument. So every way I slice it, you know, it's like all roads lead to Bitcoin. And the incentive vortex is just too strong. So, yeah, you know, and I think it's I don't think it's productive to yell at the old system and spend a bunch of time being fear. I think they're being in fear. I also think that that's all part of the divide and conquer strategy. Keep everybody scared and distracted. And, you know, so
do you think there's also that Satoshi built in a natural cap to the upside as well? Because he said this example of these billionaires going in and the price shoots up, like Samson Mao is saying, over $1 million. I mean, you can buy Bitcoin, but you can also still mine it. So when the price is that high, then all of a sudden miners become extremely, they're basically printing Bitcoin, right? So you'd be, it'd be make more sense to just mine it. So it, doesn't that provide like a natural cap to the upside as well?
It wouldn't. What comes to mind, and I'm not the most technically versed with Bitcoin, I'm more ethereal, or think about more like the philosophical implications than the technical side. But I have a very base understanding of the technical side. And the difficulty adjustment is the first thing that pops into mind. It doesn't matter how many people are trying to mine it. It's, you know, a predetermined issuance schedule. And actually, like, that ties right back into Bitcoin's good in essentially every seemingly fathomable way. If that happens, then all of a sudden now you have nation states or who, whatever heavily energized powerful forces and are now heavily incentivized to come up with better ways of producing energy. I don't know, what do they say, Roswell? You got alien fucking crafts that crashed, there's free energy, there's all this talk about the old Tartarian society and these old ancient buildings that had wireless technology. You know, there's a theory that the pyramids were this, you know, essentially these, this network of wireless technology. Like, we live in an energy-based universe, and I think the more the Bitcoin price rips, the more incentivized everybody is to figure out how to harness, capture, and channel energy more effectively, which is a good thing. Every great advancement in civilization, as far as I'm aware, came from us figuring out how to harness and utilize more energy, not less, which is also why this climate change, you know, green agenda, all is just so preposterous. But yeah, so I think it's a good thing if that happens. Price rips. Yeah, it also bring a lot of attention. I get more questions about Bitcoin when the price is ripping than I do. I got several people that do. I have a friend, I just talked about this. A friend called me who had the opportunity to buy Bitcoin at $1. Then I was ranting and raving about it in 2018. That's when he told me, he's like, ah, I could have bought it at $1. He thought it was boiling the ocean, so he didn't buy any. Then I talked to him again in 2020. Then I talked to him again in 2021. And I'm like, dude, if I were you, I'd sell your fucking house. I'd sell, dude, if I had the house, I'd sell it. I'd sink all the money into Bitcoin. Bitcoin was 50 G's at the time. So it trades down to 15 for a minute there. I look stupid. Then he's calling me the other day asking me, where just do I a minute. Buy it?
Yeah.
Where do I buy it? Where do I buy this stuff? So I think there's, I think just everything is good for Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin's good for everything. So I mean, I can tell at this point.
Eric, we've ripped right through our hour, so I cool. want to make sure you have an opportunity to let people know where to find you and what they should do when they find you.
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter, posting videos on Twitter. I try to get, I don't know, five of them up a week. Yeah, so you can find me at Twitter, Eric V Stacks, my handle.
It's also in the show notes.
Yes.
All right, so
Eric, do we have to mention something?
Pedro's got it.
Not until it's set. You know, I thought about it.
But okay.
There's no Eric, what happens at block height 840,000?
Ooh, fuck! You got me. You got 840,000 block height 84. I don't know. I would. It would be a wild guess. Is that the halving?
Yes, very good.
Yes.
Very good. And at the halving, there's also a halving party in El Salvador.
There is, and I've been talking with my wife about going. I really want to go. I don't know if I can move things around and make it happen, but I'm fucking still considering it, honestly.
And when you're saying moving things around, do you mean like supplying the party with, you know?
Was that cannabis? You know, actually, I met Max Kaiser at Pacific Bitcoin, and I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, what's the possibility someday you think you have legal weed in El Salvador? And he came basically shit on the idea. He's like, no, nah, after all of the cartels or all of the gangs and whatnot and what Bukele has done, I don't think he's going to be bringing cannabis into the country anytime soon. So that's all right. But yeah, if I could go, I still might go. I could use a tan. I'm in Northern California. I feel like it's been raining for the last 5 months. I'm ready for some, four months. I don't know. I'm ready for some sunshine.
You're invited. If you're going to come, you're invited.
Yeah. Thank you. I might still be able to make it.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you for your time this evening. Really appreciate it. Thanks for everybody for checking out the stream this evening. Wait.
That's a big question.
The RD question. Oh, the RD question. All right. Yeah. Well, fuck it. Rope, hit him.
Eric, is that your name? Yeah, Eric. Hey, this is Rope. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. So-